wasn't here.
Hey, there's my boy.
Yeah, well, that was all wasted time. Hello, welcome to episode 413 of We Were Gamers, a podcast where we forget to record the podcast. Because we were off for a week.
Wouldn't be We Were Gamers if we just forgot everything about how this works.
We were off for a week, and I attempted to record a video, which would not have involved using our recording equipment for the podcast, but instead OBS, which I remembered how to do most of, and did the Xbox Cloud video start to finish. JJ, hello.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Michael, hello.
Hiya.
I did that video that we tried to do last podcast 2 weeks ago, start to finish, no errors, except that now the controller doesn't work. It did last week. I don't know why it doesn't now. So now that's a fun little, what do you do? You know,
that does feel important.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I could hook up an Xbox controller, but what's the point? The point is to play on the deck, right?
You're holding the Steam Deck and then holding a different controller.
Yeah. So maybe this week at some point, if I have time, I'll investigate and complete said video that is just sitting there half done. But that's not what episode 413 is going to be about, is it, gentlemen?
No question.
No. The answer is it's no. I wish I could have made it work, but you know, we're here figuring it out like everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. So Michael,
what's up?
Tell me how hard it was to figure out Visions of Mana.
You know, I feel like it's a dance with creating a good demo. And recently, so I played the...
What type of dance are we talking about?
So it's a balancing act, right?
Is it breakdancing in the Olympics?
It is not Olympic breakdancing, thank goodness.
Is it?
I don't know. Some of that... hold on. I'm going to stand up for Olympic breakdancing here. Some of those routines are pretty dope, dude. I don't know. You guys are like... seen the memes, of course, and those were very bad, but like,
no, we watched the finals, and
some of them were pretty sweet.
Yeah, some of the performers were great. I think I have a problem of it going legit, let's say.
Oh yeah, I think that's fair. For the underground.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're trying to like put a numerical score to something that is very much a like counterculture and very...
It's like not performance art, right? How do you score performance art?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. How do you score performance art? Except that's what they do all the time in like gymnastics and stuff, right?
But gymnasts and divers have a set routine or a set pass or set of tricks that they are trying to do. It is submitted ahead of time. It is given a point value based on the difficulty. The breakdancing, they don't even get to pick the music. The music starts and they just have to go.
So
The music is just played for them.
That's a little bit on the...
And they have to just sort of improvise it on the spot.
That feels like that feels out of line with the Olympic scheme, right? Like the idea that a triple spin on your shoulder would be worth 40 points is more like in line with the Olympics. That surprises me to hear that it's sort of random.
Yeah. And so they still do the going back and forth, taking turns with it, right? So they're both dancing to the same music.
Oh, no. Oh,
I understood that part of it, right? And I get the idea if it's like, oh, well, like, who can do the better routine to this same music? Sure, I guess. But again, you know, I guess having it be a competition is also a little silly, right? It should be a judged thing, like gymnastics or diving or swimming, right? you know.
It could easily be.
It is.
I mean, literally, artistic swimming is this, right? That's what artistic swimming is. It's this. You know, like performance art with a group of people all synchronized swimming together, right? That's the whole thing.
Yeah, but I think even then it's choreographed and decided ahead of time, right?
That's what I mean. Like, why can't this be that? It's the same thing. It's just done on land, right? Like, why did they have to mess it up?
Yeah, I think now you're hamstringing it even more, right? Like, you're cutting it down and cutting it down and cutting it down.
Too legit, JJ.
I'm sorry. I'm not hip enough. I don't understand the streets.
It too legit. Oh boy, was the Secret of Mana legit? Well, Secret of Mana is legit. What's Visions of Mana? How does that connect to Secrets of Mana?
So, Visions of Mana is the upcoming. I think in 2 weeks now it drops the full game, but it is the first mainline Mana title in. Ooh, do you remember when the last one was, JJ? It's been over a decade.
Yeah, it's been a long time more recent Mana titles have come out, but they've all been remakes of older games.
Right.
They had a Trials of Mana remake that came out a few years ago that was pretty well liked, I think. When was the last, like, quote, main one? I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm not, I know the Mana series, but I don't know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's been over a decade or close to a decade at this point since we got a mainline Mana game. And so, you know, Square Enix had decided, hey, it's time. The nostalgia's there. We're going to put out a modernized version of a Mana game. And I think this one is going to deliver based on the segment. I haven't finished the demo, but I've got a good hour, 90 minutes into it.
Do you need to finish the demo? I've never felt, unless Bravely Default did it, where it was like, I got to finish the demo because then it helps my town or whatever.
Yeah, so this one, this gets back to where I started with, I think demos are kind of a dance these days. A lot of the demos I have played recently, and I don't know about you guys, have just been, hey, play the first hour of the game, and then when the full game comes out, we're just going to unlock it for you, and that's your, you know, that's your team or your save file. But this does something that I think older demos did a lot more, where it drops you into a section of the story. And I don't think it's far into the story. It's probably, if I had to guess, in the first 5 or 10 hours, maybe. But you already have several combat skills set up. You have a full party of characters already for when you enter into the combat. And so I think this is where the balancing act happens, right? It's kind of a complicated battle system, right? Mana is famous for the ability ring and the item rings. But this, and you know, this being an action combat in 3D has a few more layers to it than that. And so how do you drop people into it, right? Do you want them to have to go through the initial, well, here's what an enemy is and here's how you open the skill ring? Or do you drop them into it and say, hey, you have a whole bunch of skills. Here's an eye chart with all the instructions on a crash course on how to use them. And here's a big section of the open world. Go.
I think the latter is my preference. If I had to just pick off the top of my head.
I think it's mine too. I think it's more true to the spirit of what a demo is supposed to do, right?
I can definitely understand why you want that, right? Especially if, as tends to be the case in these Mana games, maybe it's going to take you 3-4 hours to get up to that point where, you know, you start from your lowly village or whatever by yourself, and then you have to add, you know, 2 party members over time, and it takes a while to unlock skills and so on. And, you know, that doesn't give you a good sense of what the game really is going to be like.
Exactly.
When you get the full party and have the whole group and you're venturing around the open world for, you know, 70 more hours or whatever.
Yeah, but you don't want to overwhelm people with the combat. Imagine, JJ, and this was my first thought when I booted up the demo the first time and got into it. And I've played Mana games, and so I skimmed maybe a little more than I should have some of the directions. And so getting into combat the first couple of times felt not quite as complicated, but a little bit like, oh, someone dropped me into the middle of a Xenoblade combat arena.
Sure. It's
just like, oh, I have three different rings of skills and I can swap between my characters on the fly, and I should have read more.
Oh no, there's more buttons here than I was expecting. What does all this do, right?
Yeah, exactly. But by the time I booted up again the second time, I leaned into it a little more. I had gone through a bunch of the menus just to poke around at things, and I felt a little better, and it felt better, and I had more fun with it the second time.
Yeah, I guess the balancing act there is to make sure you don't overwhelm so many people right off the bat that they just nope out of the game forever, right?
Exactly, yeah. I will say that in the demo, you do get to ride the giant furry wolf hounds, which is excellent. Like, let me ride the mounts that you have put in this game that everybody was excited about.
Nice.
Is it mounts because they've done that huge open world? Where do they feel necessary?
They don't feel wholly necessary. Like, your character can run probably three quarters the speed of the mount at full speed. It is, you know, it's a big open world, and it is nice to be able to traverse it pretty quickly. On that note, I will say that I really like, there is a fast travel system, and you can travel back to different areas that you visited. And within those areas, you can travel to any save point that you've unlocked, but you don't have to be at another save point to do it. So you can decide, hey, I'm across the map, I'm not near anything, let me just fast jump back to this save point and run from there. Which is really, it's being conscientious of players' time, right?
Yes.
This is me applauding, like, stand up, bravo, good job.
Yeah, it's just little attention to detail like that, right? Like, there's no need to make me hunt for another save point to jump back to the last one I used.
Especially if the game is going to do some classic mana stuff where the person needs you to go out and find mystical object A and bring it back. And you can just get the mystical object A and then hit fast travel and then not and have to
back close to
run
them
all the way back through the dungeon or whatever. Like, good job.
Yeah. Yep. So I liked it. So I don't know if this is something that will change before the launch. So I played the demo on my Steam Deck, and it threw up a message as soon as you downloaded it to start that it had not been optimized for the Steam Deck yet.
So it might give you
some performance issues, but they did mitigate that by letting you choose whether you wanted to prioritize graphics or performance. Which was kind of nice. It was a nice little touch. But I will say that one of my complaints was, again, the map.
What's wrong with the
right?
map?
Much like my, I think it was my same complaint for Animal Well, the map was designed to be read on a bigger screen. Mm. No, just viewed on a bigger screen. And so your ability to zoom into the map is limited at a certain size, because on a full size monitor, that's the size that you would want to see. But on a smaller map, it would be nice to be able to zoom in just a little bit farther to be able to see some detail. Because there are some times where you'll see a marker on the map, and the size of the marker is such that unless you could zoom in more, you can't tell if you're standing on top of it or you're off to one side, right? You're inside the boundary of the marker, but what you're looking for isn't necessarily where you're standing.
Like, someone put an X on your map somewhere and you're like to the left or the top of the X and not right at the cross point or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I get you.
So,
yeah, man, that's like, you hope that's one of those things that when they optimize for the deck a little bit, they just have some like higher res assets or whatever that they can throw in, or they just enable like an extra, 20% zoom or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to think that one's an easy fix.
You'd hope, but
Yeah. But I will say that it is nice, in an action RPG, the map is not, at least as far as I played through it, the map is not cluttered, which is really nice. It shows you get little blue circles for points of interest. which, as far as I have discovered, are either save points or treasure chests, and that's it. That's all that they are. And it shows you little icons for side quests, of which I've only found one so far. But other than that, it's there's a lot of other stuff scattered, you know, materials and collectibles scattered on the map. But they don't show up on your mini map, which is nice. It keeps it looking clean, and it's a pretty map. You know, everything about Mana Games has always been pretty visuals, and this is no exception.
That's pretty cool.
Right. One last thing that did kind of throw me for a loop, and maybe this is just me being from the East Coast and from the South. Whenever I play a game and they've made the choice to have a voice actor who has a Southern accent, it always throws me.
Uh-oh. They didn't nail it?
No. I mean, like, she actually has a Southern drawl, but it throws me in an open world fantasy epic to hear an accent that is so very grounded in my reality.
I feel like the other version of this is all the voice actors are vaguely British, and then there's one Irish person.
Oh yeah, yeah, it does the same thing. It's like, what way?
Well, that, you know, the grounded in reality thing is why every actor has a British accent, even if they're American, right? When you do like a fantasy or a sci-fi or...
Exactly, right? Yeah. British is the default like fantasy sound. So if you're not sounding British, what are we even doing here, right?
Well, it would be too grounded in reality if we all had a different, you know, accents, but... Oh, boy. Well, grounded in reality, I am not JJ. I continue down the keyboard well.
Oh no.
I ordered and have enjoyed using, and I think maybe people should get them as fidget toys. A key tester, a switch tester.
Yeah. Okay, they probably are fidget toys, although they're kind of expensive for that purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fidget toys are like $2, you know, maybe less. Right. This was an aluminum cut key, like, switch holder thing. Cost $20.
Switch toy, or fidget toys for billionaires.
I'm not a billionaire.
Hmm.
Fidget toys.
You're using it for its intended purpose, as opposed to the billionaire who would use it for a fidget toy.
Fidget toy. Oh, right. Yeah. The problem is that once you test a few keys and you're like, okay, well, these were the ones I wanted to test, right? I got a whole box of a lot of available Cherry MX switches.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, look, these other companies like mechanicalkeyboards.com has like a little sampler pack of silent keys or clicky keys or tactile keys or clicky tactile keys.
You're just buying like four keys of every type known to man.
It's basically, you could basically just keep grabbing like more and more and more and more. It's like, how much input do you really need? You know, like,
are you attempting to paralyze yourself with choice?
I'm not actually choosing to do much of anything. Thanks to all the summer sales ending, most of the keyboards are too expensive now, and I don't want to buy one. So it's more of an experiment of like, do I actually like tactile? Do I actually like this? Do I actually like that? While I, you know, wait for end of the year or something like that. I don't know. We'll see.
I think that's a fair point, though. Like, especially for something like a keyboard that if you're going to be using it a lot for typing stuff, it's important to have one that doesn't suck. It took me a while to find the kind that I like to use at work. And I've then kept that keyboard for like, you know, 10 plus years.
Well, I was sitting with it. I don't know, Michael, what are you on? What are you sitting on these days?
I'm still using my same old Razer keyboard.
So that's a mechanical keyboard. Do you know what's in there?
I did once upon a time, but I think I've had this keyboard for 10 years now, and I do not remember.
Yeah.
So I know at work, the one I have has actual springs under it, because this keyboard is mega old. But the one at home that I have is a black yeah. switches.
So I still have my SteelSeries black switch keyboard, which we bought during the StarCraft days.
Mm-hmm. I think I recall this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The SteelSeries G6 or whatever it was. Really hard to find replacement keycaps for that keyboard. They use strange sizes for certain things, but it caused
Fender lock-in. No,
I'm sure I could research better, like how to find certain ones, you know,
or you could use ones that are slightly differently sized but smaller, and it would be fine. Right,
there would be little gaps, but that would be okay. Yeah. But we did the black keys because they said all the StarCraft people liked black keys because they were springy, so their fingers moved faster in between the things, and it prevented double hits and stuff like that versus like first-person shooter people that wanted to be faster, you know?
Right. I think the pro gamer move on keyboards these days is not black, but one of those ones that has like the super quick actuation, right?
Yeah, so silvers or reds are very popular currently. Yeah. And they're off not Cherry brand counterparts, right? Like there are versions of every Cherry key and more at other brands. Currently I'm liking, I think Aku is the brand. Akko? I don't remember. But
I'm nodding sagely. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you know Akko is a brand?
No, this is me definitely pretending that I do, though.
Pretending to know. There's a lot of them. I mean, there's Gateron, there's Kale, something like that. There's a billion. I can't even get close to naming it.
And I mean, though. Andy, you have seen the dark depths, though, right? You're not trying to wander over to that abyss, right?
That's true, yes.
The keyboard hobby, it has become like a crazy luxury thing for psychos that want like $500 keyboards.
No, not for me.
Okay, good. Just making sure we're all over here on this side of the pool.
you're like this podcast depends on you staying in our water.
I mean, I can let you know we can't follow you over there, so we just want to make sure if you're swimming, you know how to swim.
Yeah. Okay, but I had a realization.
Real deep.
Yeah, I had a realization. I had the black keyboard because we were playing StarCraft a lot. And so I was like, I want a mechanical keyboard. This is what all the StarCraft pros are using. I'm buying that. That's it. Done.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We played a lot of StarCraft, to be clear. For folks that didn't know, Andy and I played like hundreds of hours of StarCraft 2.
Probably close to thousands, if not more. We took our keyboards and mice to tournaments and all that sort of horse bananas, you know? And then the other mechanical keyboard I have that's sitting here in front of me that I'm actually using currently because it didn't have a bunch of keycaps that are broken was inherited also in a, well, I guess I'll use that fashion, which was we went to an event and I won it or Matt won it. I don't remember which.
Cool.
And, it had Cherry Silvers on it. And I was like, well, I'm not playing StarCraft that much, so Cherry Silvers are even better. But it's a little bit mushy on the typing side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you
that's
know.
Always been my number one concern about getting those kinds of, what is it, silver and red are the ones that do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, we're talking in cherry colors, but like every version of these keys has, you know, every manufacturer makes
kind
ones
of a
like
component
this.
Class a little bit, isn't it? I don't know. Keyboard, well.
Yeah, but I've always like, because I have, like I said, a black keyboard here that I've been using for forever.
Very bouncy.
It could probably stand to be replaced, but yeah, like, I worry that if I'm typing out, like, you know, a bunch of text or whatever, that I'm going to mush my letters now because I'm so used to the resistance that I'm going to have, like, a lot of problems getting all the words down in my hand. You know, it's just going to look like a bunch of extra keys all over the place.
So I'm not necessarily in need of replacing the keyboard, but realizing that the two keyboards I have, I didn't even research. I just got them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was out there. It's kind of like interesting. And my main drive for this is I'm trying to get a mechanical portable, like a 60% keyboard. But then again, you got to think of the noise, right? Like, I may like the clickety clackety one, but I'm not sure everyone around me will like the clickety clackety one.
Yeah.
If I take the keyboard to a library or something while I'm waiting for child pickup.
Yeah. Yeah. I know so many people that swear by those clicky ones, like they love it. But yeah, I'd be afraid. I know even people that have, you know, that have worked in offices, and they're like, oh, I have to bring in a keyboard because I hate the ones that work gives us. And they bring in like clicky mechanical keyboards, and the people that sit near them within a week are at their throat.
Yeah.
You better get the silent ones if you're going to do that stuff.
Yeah. I really like these. I think it's Akko one switches that are tactile ones, so they don't click, but they bump, you know?
Yeah, that's the halfway. That's newer than the, like, back in my day, they didn't have that technology, but I think that's the new middle ground, right? These kind of bumpy ones that have like a halfway point and then the full actuation.
Yep. So the problem with those is they're still not silent. So we'll see if I ever pull the trigger on anything. It'll have to be on sale because I don't have the money to be a keyboard bananas person.
It's fair.
Yeah. But the key tester actually is pretty dang cool. I gotta say, if you're kind of like a little bit into keyboards and you don't want to go out and build a bunch of them, but you want to kind of know why people are going crazy for building keyboards, it really isn't an insane little fun hobby thing to go out and buy one of those like 16 key tester things and then just buy a bunch of singles from a website and then test them out and be like, ooh, that's different.
Yeah. I definitely think if you're willing, you know, if you're thinking like, hey, you know, like Andy or I, you're going to keep a keyboard for 10 years. You know, Michael said you've had yours that long also. Mm-hmm. Like a $20 upfront purchase and, you know, $10 in keys or whatever is probably worth it if you're planning to keep this thing around that long term, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to take the time to research or whatever. Anyway. I don't know. I don't know what to do with that information.
You know, you're finding the preferences. You're learning about yourself. That's always always worthy goal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there hasn't been a lot of game time over here as much as Michael may have had to go through that demo. But I do maybe have some time to catch up on TV. What are we recommending these days? Because I'm behind and I need to know what to prioritize next. And my TV keeps turning on to the Baywatch station.
Is this because you previously left it on the Baywatch station?
No, I don't know why it does this, but Samsung has their own like TV channels on there. They have basically like a streaming TV service. I don't know how it works. I don't pay for it. It's just there. I often change it to MacGyver on with their version of TV Land, which is literally just MacGyver 24/7. But it somehow finds its way back to the Baywatch station. I don't know. I don't know what the TV is trying to tell me.
I don't have anything for you on that front necessarily.
if anybody can tell me how to get my Samsung TV to stay on a previously selected station, let me know. Shoot us an email. Tell me how to do it. It just keeps going back there. I don't understand. It's actually pretty comical, I have to say.
I think the problem is probably a lot of the good TV stuff people are going to recommend you are like within apps, and it's not going to like force open an app when you turn the TV on, right?
True, absolutely yeah. Not. I would leave on some whatever app, you know, even YouTube might be better. But yeah, I have a very good chuckle when I leave that, I turn that Samsung TV onto MacGyver station or onto the news or whatever other station, and then it's always back to something else. What should I watch instead of that? Because I'm open to suggestions. Gotta tell you, not the best show on the world.
Fair. I think you were already watching Shogun, right? You guys still working on that?
Mm-hmm. 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 We're paused on that. We had a lot of camping trips in this last situation of weeks. Provided no access to TV, but we're gonna hit it hard.
All right, that's all out there, so I think you should be good on that one. Michael, did you watch X-Men 97, or have you been?
I intended to. It was supposed to be next on my list, and then I detoured when I realized that there was a second season I had missed of Star Wars Visions.
Oh, I haven't hit that yet. I'm currently in the middle of Tales of the Empire, which is another Star Wars cartoon, by the way, in case no one knows what I'm talking about. It's an anthology thing. The first five episodes are about, oh gosh, I'm going to forget her name and I'm going to feel terrible about it. The girl from Ahsoka, the bad guy, the lady.
The bad guy from Ahsoka.
Yeah, the sister.
I guess she's the Night Sister. Uh-huh. Yeah. Gosh, Morgan Elsbeth.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Yeah. The not the big bad, but one of the big bads from Ahsoka. Yeah. She's got the first five episodes are about like her character and how she developed into who she is. And then I think the next three are about Inquisitors. It's like a little, you know, it's like Tales of the Jedi, Tales of the Empire, Tales of the this, Tales of the that.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever read those books. I read those books. Tales of the Bounty Hunters was the best of those books, by the way.
I think those are the only ones that I read a couple of were some of the Tales of the Bounty Hunter books. Those were good. I really liked
them. Yeah.
Yeah. No surprise, the bounty hunter stuff that doesn't have anything to do with Jedis is always the best stuff in Star Wars.
Okay. There's some good stuff with Jedi.
I didn't say that. I said the best stuff.
I guess I really like the X-Wing series, and only towards the end did it become about Jedi.
And what happened at the end of it? Then it got canceled.
The X-Men series? I guess
they just stopped making those books, right? That's what happened.
I mean, I think the guy, didn't he die?
Oh.
I don't know.
This is me not knowing the answer to that at all.
Maybe not. No, maybe not. Maybe he's still alive. No, he's still alive. Stackpole is still alive. I'm thinking
he just wrote books
author.
For us in that MechWarrior Kickstarter a few years ago.
Yeah, Stackpole was the guy that wrote those X-Wing books. He's still kicking. Yeah, it's been like a decade since that game came out, man.
Don't say stuff like that, dude.
It's been a decade. Hasn't it? It's got to be close. Battletech's got to be close to a decade old at this point, which is really sad.
I would recommend X-Men 97 very highly. I have not watched any of the other two that you guys are talking about, though. Are they good?
Fine. Tales of the Empire is fine. I think you gotta be invested, man. You know, if you're watching the cartoons, if you're into the Bad Batch, yeah, whatever. Just spend an extra 4 hours or whatever it is. It's fine.
Okay, right? So that sounds like a no for me then.
Okay. I mean,
but okay.
It's hard.
No, I appreciate knowing that though. Like, I'm glad you're just like, hey, this is for these people, and I don't include myself there.
Yeah, I do include myself there, but I'm at the level of, I can't remember everyone's name anymore, but I remember how they're all connected. You know, it's starting to be that way. It's like, oh yeah, that guy was in that show. I don't remember his name. Like, Michael, I think you're in the middle of Ahsoka, right?
Yeah, we've got three episodes left.
Oh, okay, so you've already
left. Three or four.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of it. And
I watched like, that some show, of this, but like,
well, yeah, some of this tale stuff is like from Mandalorian, right? They go to one of the planets that Morgan Elsbeth was at in Mandalorian. And then, anyway. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff that connects back to the Clone Wars show in her history and stuff like that. So, just like Ahsoka, it's going to be, it's kind of if you know more or want to. Do you want to know more?
I'm good. Thanks.
I don't think that's the answer that's allowed in that movie, but okay.
You're right. Actually, that would probably get me.
Yeah.
Re-educated or whatever they do.
It would.
In the fascist future.
The what future?
That whole world is like super fascist. That's the whole thing in Starship Troopers.
I don't think they use that word. I think they use.
They don't. Yeah.
Democratically. You know.
It's me using the word. I'm the one going to the re-education camp.
I'm trying to remember what they called it in Helldivers. Democratic.
Oh, super democracy.
Super democracy or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, X-Men 97, good. I'll have to check out the Visions. I remember watching the first season of that Vision stuff, and I liked it. So
yeah, so the second season is different in that season one was all Japanese studios, and they all did a short take on Star Wars. I think they were all between like 15 and 25 minutes. And so mm-hmm. season two is no different in that sense. They are all very short pieces, which is great. It means you can get through... Really, you can get through all of them in the amount of time it would take you to watch a full-length movie.
Okay.
But you can break it up. To me, so it's global studios this time. So the studios are from all over the world. And so you get a lot more variation in style and tone from piece to piece. I thought the first episode was really solid. And then the next probably three... I think there were nine total. Yeah, so the next three were a little bit of a slow burn, and then it got me at the fifth one, and then the back half went really fast, and I enjoyed those a lot.
I think that's on par with the first season of good, 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 slow, good, go, slow, good, 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 you know?
Yeah, they got the order right.
There were definitely some misses in that first season, I remember, so... All right. Well, sure. I'm going to put that on my list.
With enough variation, right? You're going to have more hits than misses with most people, and that's all you're going for, right? You don't have to hit everyone.
Yeah. And that's the whole point of the anthology thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I would recommend it.
All right.
Well, it's nice because it's probably not dependent on previous stuff.
Oh, on anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could say something like that about The Acolyte, but I have seen that, and maybe y'all don't need to rush to go check it out. I mean, you know, I didn't hate it, but
aw,
seems like there's better stuff you guys could spend your time on than that. IMO.
Okay. Well, I won't rush then.
Which is too bad, because I really liked the cast. I just think the story kind of let him down. And, you know, I don't know. Jedi stuff is tough, you know, because they are supposed to be good all the time. And so then you want to tell, like, a murder mystery with Jedi, and it's like, well, but they can just use the Force to figure it out. So, like, what?
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Definitely... You know, this is probably a side podcast thing where I have to once again question Ken about how, you know, Jedi fall off cliffs and die.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
When we've, you know, physically had Jedi that can just sort of fly, you know.
And they talk, it even happens in this show. They're like, well, we have to repair this elevator. That's the only way up unless you want to climb this mountain. And it's like,
pretty sure I've seen Jedi do that.
You could do that, I'm pretty sure, and it wouldn't be that tough, you mm-hmm. know? And they're like, well, guess we'll repair the elevator then, and you're just like, you what? Or like, go back to your spaceship and fly over? Like, that's also an option? We're not talking about that for some reason? Anyway, I don't know. That's not, to be fair to this show, that is not a problem limited to Star Wars stuff. That's just like, bad TV has these problems sometimes, you know? Not my favorite. You know what, though? I will tell you guys, I guess we're changing services here, if that's all right.
Out of Disney, is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Out of Disney and into the wild of...
I will say I have now watched that Batman the Caped Crusader or Caped Crusader series.
The Amazon show?
It is an Amazon show.
It's supposed to mimic the original animated series.
A lot of the same executive producers and a
Bruce
style.
Bruce Timm?
Yep. He's the first name that shows up in the credits.
Bruce Timm.
Very, very reminiscent style. It's not the same show. It's not even a continuation of that show. It's like its own thing, but, you know, spiritually there. It's great. I really enjoyed it. I think it, you know, is striking a, like, Batman earlier in his time as Batman tone. So, you know, he doesn't have, like, all the crazy gadgets, and he doesn't have, you know, a giant cast of villains that are constantly escaping from Arkham all the time. But it's good. You know, they make some changes for, you know, the year of our Lord 2024.
cell phones?
No, because this is the 1920s or whatever, right? So they don't have that stuff. But they do have regular telephones, and Batman somehow has one in his car because he's Batman, right?
Right, sure.
Sure, yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, they have, you know, peoples of all sorts of races and colors, which is not normally a thing Batman has been up to, historically in the comics. They do some gender and racial changes on certain characters, that you might or might not expect. I think all that actually works fine and is not a big deal. Once you actually, like, you know, once the show actually gets going.
Turns out maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. You could just have them be whatever, and as long as they do the thing that the villain or the character is supposed to do, it's all good, right? So I think that show is pretty great. And, you know, maybe, Andy, in terms of, like, the kid appropriateness, I think you could show it to your kids. You know, the bad guys do shoot guns all the time, though. Now, they don't really
hit
Batman. They
shot guns in the previous
series. Yeah, they did, right? Yeah. And so, you know, that's not... But, like, you know, some parents don't want violence, right? And Batman do be punching people, and there are guns being used. And people do get shot, but it's not like, you know, blood flies out or whatever. The person is like, you know, ah, and then falls over or whatever.
Sure. I think my issue is that they are often... the suspense of those, a lot of suspense tends to be what gets them.
It is very tense. I got by a jump scare at least once.
Okay.
So, you know, and there is some stuff that is, you know, very unsettling and intentionally so. There's a lot of, you know, corrupt police and the Batman stuff.
The Batman.
So, you know, I think it's a great show. I would recommend it for people looking for good animated stuff to watch. And again, you know, 25-minute episodes, you can knock those out pretty quick. Same deal with X-Men, actually, even like the thing that's actually nicer about this compared with X-Men, I feel, is X-Men is like a story, you know, kind of the full way through, like, you know, episodes connecting into episodes.
Right.
This does have connective tissue between the episodes, but it's real light. And you could kind of like skip one or two and probably not miss much.
It's so pretty kind of episodic.
Bad to back to how it was, right? Where it was you kind of know what the characters were up to, but also it doesn't really matter.
And some stuff will come back a little bit, you know, episode to episode or whatever, but it's not like deeply important. And you would easily pick it up from the start of the next episode and it would not be, you know, it would not be too hard of a jump to figure out how they got there.
Hmm.
So, yeah, highly recommended. That was a really great show.
I think, Michael, we need to know if The Bear season 3 held up to the previous hype.
Yes.
Okay. I like, well, I like that's it. Welcome.
So long, folks.
Well, it's funny. We started season three, and we were my wife and I were very divided on the first episode. The first episode is very much, and they did this a time or two in each of the first seasons. And I think we were split on those episodes then too. It's a very artistic episode. There's not really plot to it. It plays around a lot with bouncing around into different periods in time, and I think it does a very good job of making sure you know which time period you're in every time it jumps around, so it's not confusing from that standpoint. But there's not really plot driving the episode forward. Like, it's building to something, and it builds to something very good, but it doesn't get there by hitting you with, well, then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, right? It's painting you a picture, not writing you a story.
So my problem sometimes with time jumping is that it's not necessary. It just happens. It just sort of, they're like, oh, you know, and then now we're going to start doing time jumps. And it's like, well, this whole series hasn't done time jumps before now. Why are we doing it now? You know?
Yeah, I think this didn't feel unnecessary because of what it's building towards. So I don't think this spoils anything, but the periods you're jumping between are the different restaurants that Carmi, the main character, has worked at over his career, right? And there are three or four main stops that they bounce between. And it's sort of picking moments from his culinary training to inform the scene of him in the present and the dish that he's trying to build.
Oh. The pressure.
Yeah, that's some of it, but I thought it was really well done, just like as a piece of art, right? And was very satisfied with it, and my wife was very turned off by it, but you know, either way, we were both like, well, we're just going to keep going. And they didn't. Most of the rest of the episodes were, you know, the plot of season three takes over, and you know, you go through the rest of the episodes. So, but they did something different to start, and you know, it's either your thing or it's not.
All right, then. Well, this podcast is either your thing or it's not. If it is your thing, tell me how to fix my television and get it to start on another channel.
I mean, I guess, you know, we could make it even more, you know, on our back on our own BS, and I could talk about the Trails game I've been playing.
No.
Oh, yeah.
When did you start a new Trails game?
When I finished Elden Ring.
Oh, my gosh.
Did we talk about me finishing Elden Ring?
Nope.
Last time? No, I didn't remember if we talked about that.
Uh-uh. We didn't get the end of the story.
All right. End this podcast by ending Elden Ring. That's what we're going to do, JJ.
Man, that last boss is some BS, dude. Screw that guy.
You're specifically talking about...
The DLC. Yeah, the DLC.
JJ, on a scale of 1 to COTC BOA 8, where what are we talking in terms of shenanigans?
Man. The shenanigans level are on par for sure. Okay. The problem is, like, you know, COTC, that boss in BOA 8 that you're talking about, you know, does a lot of shenanigans, and there's a high level of shenanigans in this boss. But it's accompanied by really flashy moves that make it really hard to tell what the heck is going on.
Okay. Oh, I hate that. I really, really don't like when game effects make it harder for you to see.
All right. Like, so, Andy, imagine, if you will, a game that is about seeing your opponent's moves so that you can dodge or block.
Right.
Yes. You know, that's kind of the whole thing, as they see as they wind up so that you can have your shield up or you can dodge through it.
Uh-huh.
And then imagine a boss who is all pump fakes.
Oh, no.
He's just like,
are they pump?
Bam, and then you're dead, of course, because that was the one time you put the shield down.
Are they pump fakes because the characters doing them, or are they pump fakes because they blow up the screen with tons of stuff and you can't tell what's going on?
Oh, there's both kinds. There's definitely the kind where they literally make his sword swing take, like, you know, he reaches back, but then he reaches back a second time, and then he swings forward, and then it comes crashing down overhead, not on the side. And you're like, how could I have known this was going to do this? It's like the arm, like, flipped around 90 degrees halfway through the strike, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one kind of BS that once you learn and see it enough times, you could, you know, the typical Elden Ring, Dark Souls kind of style pattern, right? Once you see it, you know, you're like, okay, I can block this. I know what's going to happen. I've learned through repetition. The other part is later in the fight, where then these effects are also accompanied by, like, lasers from the sky, giant bright lights, dudes like flowing white hair flipping around all over the place. The dude doing like Goku style teleporting around the arena, like really just not cool. I did eventually beat him. It took really long, easily the hardest boss of the DLC. And not because it was like, you know, the moves were difficult or anything, but because that second phase was just too BS. Like, I backed up, but I didn't back up far enough, and I got hit by a white laser beam from the sky, but from behind me. Oops, you're dead. Like,
yeah, I don't like that type of stuff. There's stuff like that in older games that we have been trying to play around here, and it's like, I can't physically see the boss because I have to avoid... I was trying to remember what game we were playing. I think it was, we were trying to replay Kingdom Hearts. And it's like, I can't see Ursula while she's doing her moves. I can only hear the moves she's making, because to dodge the attacks, I have to be swimming in a different direction and I can't see anything. So I get killed from behind by stuff that doesn't make any sense.
Yep. This boss also, like Ursula, has some of those like giant AoE moves that take up half the battle arena, and you better be on the other side, right?
Yeah, yeah. Unless you, you know, I was not behind her, so now I'm sucked all the way in to get attacked. Wonderful. Yeah.
The thing that made it finally work for me was, you know, I had been dying for, like, you know, well over an hour, and was like, okay, this just is not working. Mm-hmm. I need to do something else. And so I went back to the vendor, and I respec'd my character a bunch into, like, it is time for defense. I made sure I had pumped my, like, Skadu tree levels up to the top, and, you know, got the heaviest armor and the best shield I could find and a bunch of defensive buffs. And then all of a sudden the damage that used to kill me in like two hits is now taking like, you know, less than a sixth of my life, right?
But it turns out output good enough at that point.
Yeah, but you can't die. It doesn't matter.
Whittle them down. Kill them with kindness.
You know, then I also got into like, this boss is actually weak to like rot and poison and frost and all these other like side effects, right? And so I got like my little ant spear sword that has like poison and bleed on it, and then my my frost weapon, and got into doing all that stuff, so my damage output stayed, you know, doable. But yeah, it became from a, like, you know, a DPS race where I'm doing tons of damage but also I'm taking tons of damage too, like, you cannot damage me as much and I can poke you down, and then eventually you're gonna tick down with all these status effects. Which you know, completely legitimate. I don't want to hear anyone complain about this. Don't make the boss vulnerable to poison if you don't want him to give you to poison him, right?
Yeah. True. True.
So, close the book on that. Overall, the DLC was really great. Like, I really enjoyed almost every part of it. There are a ton of weird bosses in that game, man. I showed you guys the stuff from Bale. Bale and that dragon is maybe one of the highest points, I think. Just so fun, that whole fight. The final boss, not one of the high points, I would say. The dungeon leading up to the boss was good, but the boss itself, eh.
Aw. That's too bad. But you left on a high note.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, right, it was more Elden Ring, and I really liked Elden Ring, so it was a good time.
Okay. If anyone else had trouble with that final boss, Michael, where should they send an email to get JJ's advice?
They can send that to podcast@wewergamers.com. Also, let us know if if there are shows that you like that we should be watching.
Ooh, yeah.
Tell me how to fix my TV.
Yeah.
I'm pleading with you all.
Andy, I'm confident if we set up a pie hole in your house, it'll fix it, but it'll also cause you other problems.
Like a restaurant?
No. So, okay.
There's a restaurant. There's a restaurant called Pie Hole.
I don't know if we have full enough time to go into this. You've never heard of a pie hole? So it's like a little server that you run off of a Raspberry Pi that redirects all the ads coming in on your network to like dead.
Oh, we'll have to talk about this next time.
So I'm sure you can get Samsung's IPs in there and then you won't have this problem, but also it might break a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll research and come back with that next week.